on duty, but without pay.
The Coast Guard, TSA, air traffic controllers, and others are working in Florida, but missing paychecks.
Plus, Florida could be the next battleground over abortion rights.
This is the Florida Roundup from WLRN Public Media in Miami and WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. While the abortion battle is headed to the states, here in Florida, a new restrictive bill has been filed ahead of the legislative session. How will it affect access? Also ahead, the partial government shutdown means Coast Guard officers patrolling the state's thousands of miles of coastline are without pay.
You can join the conversation on the telephone calling 305-995-1800. You can also join us on social media. Look for our handle on Twitter at Florida Roundup. It's all ahead on the Florida Roundup after the news. Welcome to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Thanks for being with us. Well, Florida may be the next battleground state over abortion rights. With 6 weeks until the start of the spring legislative session in Tallahassee, a new proposal has been filed that would ban abortions in Florida if a doctor detects a fetal heartbeat. Republican Mike Hill of Pensacola introduced the bill.
Now, it would require a doctor to tell a woman wanting an abortion if the fetus has a heartbeat and show it to her or have her listen to it. The woman could decide not to do that, but would then have to do so in writing. And if a doctor performed the abortion, it would be considered a third-degree felony.
Now, the legislation also removes the word fetus from the legal definition of abortion and replaces it with, quote, unborn human baby, end quote. As a candidate, Governor Ron DeSantis said he would sign a fetal heartbeat bill banning abortions. And this effort comes as the Florida Supreme Court now has two new Republican-appointed members, and the U.S. Supreme Court now has a conservative majority. So what could this mean for access to abortion in Florida? And how is the abortion battle shifting to state houses and legislatures around America? We're going to begin the Florida Roundup right now with a closer look as we welcome Caroline Corbin. She's a constitutional law professor at the University of Miami School of Law, joining us from the WLRN studios in Miami, and also with us Alice Olstein, healthcare reporter on Capitol Hill for Politico, on the line from the NPR studios in Washington. And we want your calls too as we talk about abortion. Give us a call right now on the Florida Roundup, 305-995-1800, with your calls and questions, or tweet the show at Florida Roundup. So, Caroline, let's begin with you. This measure, if it makes it through the legislative process, would effectively ban abortions in Florida after about 6 weeks into a pregnancy. How does that stack up constitutionally, and how do you see this measure holding up in court if it's to be challenged, which is almost certain to happen?
These heartbeat bills are not even a little bit constitutional. In fact, they violate both the U.S. Constitution and the Florida Constitution, so they should be struck down pretty quickly.
Okay. The Supreme Court is changing. This month, Governor Ron DeSantis named two conservative justices to the high court. He said he wanted a conservative makeover. In the past, the Florida Supreme Court has blocked conservative measures, including those involving abortion. Could that change this time around?
Absolutely. I mean, the makeup of the court has shifted dramatically. There are only seven justices on the Florida Supreme Court, and the three most liberal ones are retiring. So it is possible that the Florida Supreme Court could reinterpret the Florida Constitution. But just to be clear, the Florida Constitution has a very explicit provision guaranteeing the right to privacy. It says that every Floridian has the right to be let alone and free from government intrusion into a person's private life. And so they're going to have a hard time arguing that the government forcing people to carry an unwanted pregnancy is not government intrusion into a person's private life.
That's specifically what you think this proposal would violate in the Florida Constitution.
Correct.
Is that right? What about in the U.S. Constitution? You said that this would violate both.
In the U.S. Constitution, it's been clear for decades that women have a right to an abortion unless the government can show, well, let me say that the rule for the federal law is that any regulation of abortion that imposes an undue burden on women would be unconstitutional. And undue burden has two components. It means if it creates a substantial obstacle for women seeking an abortion, it would be unconstitutional. Or, and this is a more recent addition, if the government can't prove with evidence that it actually accomplishes the government's goal, in that case, the regulation would be considered an undue burden and unconstitutional. And obviously, a law that essentially bans abortion would be an undue burden.
It's 305-995-1800 as we talk about the battleground in the states, including Florida, over abortion. That is taking shape this year. Tweet us as well at Florida Roundup. Let's go to Alice Olstein now. You cover healthcare on Capitol Hill for Politico. So looking at this nationwide, we are seeing a number of legal challenges make their way through the legislatures of the nation. There are also some states that have trigger laws on their books. For example, if the Supreme Court were to overturn Roe versus Wade or significantly weaken it, states could immediately pass laws banning abortion outright. As you cover this at the national level, can you explain a little bit about how conservative majorities in a number of state houses in this country have been waiting for just such this moment when there's a conservative majority on the Supreme Court and this issue can be moved more to the right, more to the side of less access to abortion? Give us the big picture, if you could.
Sure, absolutely. So Florida is certainly not an outlier here. And like you said, many states around the country with conservative majorities in their state houses and conservative governors are moving these sorts of abortion restrictions. Several other states have already put forward this year similar heartbeat-related bans, and there are other types of abortion bans and restrictions that would violate Roe versus Wade being introduced, being voted on, being passed. Several have been blocked by courts before, but like you said, there is a lot of attention right now on the Supreme Court's new conservative majority, and we just don't know how willing that majority is to revisit precedent like Roe versus Wade and potentially overturn it, or make a lot of abortion restrictions that are possible without overturning Roe versus Wade directly, but by stretching the definition of what constitutes an undue burden.
Would it be more likely then for the high court to say, well, we're going to leave this up to individual states rather than making a sweeping ruling, which watchers of the court going all the way back to the early 1970s have argued that the backlash against Roe v. Wade was because it was a sweeping ruling. If the Supreme Court kicks this back to the states, then states like Florida would be freer to make any sorts of laws they want restricting abortion. Abortion would still be technically legal, but as a practical matter, the reality on the ground would be that it's just not, it's not available in a great majority of America, or would not be. Is that a realistic way to look at this issue?
Yes, and I think in certain parts of the country that is already the case. A woman might have to travel a great distance and have a mandatory waiting period and pay a certain amount because she can't use Medicaid coverage, for instance, to access an abortion. And so abortion is already inaccessible in many parts of the country for women of a certain socioeconomic status. But the legal rights are still in place, which I think is the concern here about that being overturned. And yes, an overturn of Roe versus Wade would return the issue to the states. And that's why I think you see a lot of action on the state level in both directions. States introducing abortion bans and restrictions like this Florida heartbeat bill, and states going in the opposite direction and putting Roe versus Wade's protections into state law in the event that it's overturned at the federal level, that there are still those state level protections.
Let me ask Alice about the other states. And you mentioned that Florida is not an outlier here with restrictive legislative proposals regarding abortion. In Ohio, for instance, banning a certain type of abortion procedure commonly used in the second trimester Iowa has a fetal heartbeat law that could be similar to what Florida's efforts here. In Mississippi, there's a ban on abortion after 15 weeks of pregnancy. Lots of kind of different ways at this where lawmakers are making these moves. Is any one of these further along and further along in the judicial system to have it wind up in the Supreme Court of the United States?
Absolutely. So Ohio also tried to push a heartbeat ban that was vetoed by Governor Kasich. And there's a new governor now, so we might see new efforts to pass that again. Iowa's law was blocked by courts, but it's making its way through the court system now. So it's on hold, like it has been put on hold by courts in every state that has passed such a policy. So the issue that is likely to get to the Supreme Court first is not like these heartbeat bans. It is a law out of Indiana that Vice President Mike Pence actually signed into law when he was governor that would ban abortion based on the woman's reason for seeking the abortion. If the reason was the race, gender, or disability status of the fetus, and that is the woman's reason for getting an abortion, it would be illegal. Now, on the side of wanting to restrict abortions and pass this policy, they're saying that having an abortion based on the disability status or race or gender of the fetus is sort of leading us on a path to eugenics. On the other side, there is the concern that the government should not have the right to decide what is and is not an acceptable reason, that that is a violation of constitutional right to privacy. And so we know that the Supreme Court is actively considering taking this case out of Indiana, and they could announce as soon as this afternoon.
Well, as we track all this, Caroline, let me ask you about this as well. As we discuss what might happen in Florida when it comes to abortion, let's note that according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the abortion rate in this country has plummeted. It's fallen dramatically over the past decade, about 25%, about the lowest level that the government has on record. This is largely due to better access and education about contraception. Also, the number of teen pregnancies has decreased dramatically because there's been a big awareness and prevention campaign there. So we're talking about fewer abortions overall in America. Caroline Corbin, of course, that is the larger picture. But what it is remarkable to note that the rates have really, since the 70s, when abortion first became legal, they've dropped and dropped and dropped in the developed world, the U.S. and Europe in particular.
What are your thoughts about that?
Well,
how that has colored the debate here.
It seems to me that something that everybody should be getting behind is expanding access to contraception for precisely the reason you articulated, is that if people would not become pregnant in the first place, then there would be no need. Unfortunately, access to contraception is also under attack in this country, thereby making it, instead of easier, sometimes more difficult to use a strategy that should, in theory, be acceptable to everybody.
Access to health care, access to contraception, the abortion debate likely to come to the Florida State House in just 6 weeks with a new proposal, a restrictive abortion proposal, the so-called fetal heartbeat bill, which has been laid on the table by Republican Mike Hill from Pensacola. 305-995-1800 is the phone number to join our discussion. Arlena in St. Augustine is up first on line six. Arlena, thanks for holding on. Your thoughts on this?
Hello?
Hello, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Hi. I just sort of wanted to speak on...
Yeah, go ahead. Arlena, we seem to have missed you. I think the point she was going to make was to follow the law professor here, Caroline, that she thought it was unconstitutional as well, but also talked about a fetus not viable until 20 to 22 weeks. Now, without getting into a medical conversation here, this bill and other bills don't necessarily make that kind of distinction. Is that an important distinction?
Again, abortion is currently protected by both constitutions until the point of viability. And one of the most shocking things about this heartbeat bill is that the heartbeat, it happens very early in development. It happens 4 weeks after conception. And so, strictly speaking, we're dealing not even with a fetus, but with an embryo. And because this happens so early, it often happens even before a woman is aware that she is pregnant. And that's why these heartbeat bills are often described as really essential bans on abortion.
It's 305-995-1800. Let us know your thoughts on this bill, the fetal heartbeat bill that will be proposed in March in the Florida legislature. Frances is in Fort Pierce. Hi, Frances. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hey.
Yes. I hope you can hear me okay.
Yes, we can.
My aunt was a social worker in around the Bell area of Florida in the 50s and 60s. I think maybe through Catholic Charities, but I don't remember exactly. But she would tell me the extent to which low-income women would go in order to ensure their reproductive lives when things happened, be it rape or, a pregnancy that was unplanned or what have you. But for those trying to chip away at a woman's right to choose and access to contraception, if they think that abortions are not going to continue to happen, they are wrong. So I just wanted to pass that on.
Thank you for that, Frances. And Alice Olstein with Politico, as you mentioned a moment ago, if abortion access is greatly restricted, the reality is that it does become a race and class issue. More privileged women will drive or travel even overseas, as they did before abortion was legal, to get access to the procedure. That certainly history shows that, doesn't it?
Yes, and I think that is something very much under discussion on Capitol Hill, particularly in the House, where Democrats and progressive Democrats and Democrats who are progressive on reproductive rights in particular have taken power and are now the heads of several key healthcare committees and subcommittees. There's a lot of discussion about the longstanding restriction on any taxpayer dollars going to support abortion care and coverage of insurance coverage of abortion under Medicaid. And so I think that it's very much part of the discussion that these sorts of restrictions, even shy of a total abortion ban, do disproportionately impact lower income women.
Let's take another call here from Miami, South Florida. Meryl on line four. Go ahead, Meryl. You're on the radio.
Thank you. I was calling because it appears to me that this is a very female-driven bill, which is great. But there should be no need for that. A woman should be able to do what she wants with her body. And while that embryo and then the fetus is inside of her, she's the incubator for the baby. There's nobody should have any say, especially the government, as to what a female could do. If it was a male-driven incident, it wouldn't be any talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for letting me.
Meryl, thank you. Go ahead, Professor.
Yeah, and I think you've really put your finger on the justifications for protecting abortion. It is about bodily autonomy, the right to control what you do with your own body, and it's also very much about equality. Women cannot participate as equals in the social, economic, and cultural life of this country without being able to control their reproduction.
We want to hear from the state about abortion. Wherever you are in Florida, we're talking about the fetal heartbeat bill that is teed up in the Florida legislature as the battle over contraception and abortion moves to the states. It's 305-995-1800. We're going to continue our conversation with Alice Olstein of Politico. Also with us this hour, Caroline Corbin with the University of Miami School of Law. And your calls and tweets, where do you stand? Are you pro-choice, pro-life? Are you just now hearing about this issue? We want to hear from you. So give us a call here on the Florida Roundup as we talk about this and later in the hour, how the Coast Guard, TSA, and other federal workers who've been furloughed in the state are working without pay. How is that affecting our coastlines, our airports, and more? That's later in the hour. It's the Florida Roundup. A quick break, and we will be right back. You're listening to Florida Public Radio. Stay with us. Back in just a moment. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. Thanks so much for listening this week here to Florida Public Radio. We are talking about the upcoming legislative session, specifically around one bill that is certain to generate some heat. It is generating some conversation here throughout the state of Florida. The Sunshine State is likely to be among the next battlegrounds over abortion rights. A new bill has been proposed by Republican Mike Hill from Pensacola. It is a so-called fetal heartbeat bill. It would ban abortions if a doctor detects a fetal heartbeat. 305-995-1800 is the phone number. Alice Olstein is a healthcare reporter on Capitol Hill from Politico. She joins us from the NPR studios in Washington. And Caroline Corbin is a constitutional law professor at the University of Miami School of Law with us here in Miami. Your phone calls right back to him in Orlando. Joe on line two. Go ahead, Joe. You're on the radio.
Yes. So I am definitely pro-life. I'm a father of two. If I got an opportunity career-wise where I found out that I wouldn't be able to advance in my career, would it be okay for me to then take my 2-month-old quietly down to an office somewhere to be euthanized just because I felt like that was the right thing to do? I think the word that needs to be, everyone keeps using this word abortion, but no one's using the word murder. I think until we start reproducing outside of our own bodies, women, I believe, should start thinking about this human being that's coming out of them. You know, it's against the law to commit murder, to kill children and to bury them in a backyard somewhere, but to take a human being that is being formed in the human body and to discard it like it's just a piece of tissue, to me, it just screams craziness.
Joe, we hear you. Thank you for sharing the viewpoint. Professor Corbin?
Right. And I understand that that's a deeply held religious viewpoint of many people. However, it is a viewpoint. And in this country, we don't impose one religion viewpoint on everybody else. So absolutely, you should be able to live and abide by your religious precepts, but the rest of the world shouldn't necessarily also have to follow them.
Alice Olstein, when you look at the public opinion on abortion, as we heard from Joe, there are many, many millions of pro-life Americans. And by the way, let's talk about the politics of this, who vote on this single issue. Certainly evangelical Christians who support President Trump strongly will tell you that this is one of the main reasons why, if not the main reason why, because they feel so strongly about this. That said, at the same time, as of 2018, public support for legal abortion has been as high as it's ever been in decades of polling. According to Pew, 58% say abortion should be legal in all or most cases. 37% of Americans say it should be illegal in all or most cases. So, Alice, it's remarkable as you look at this. A majority of Americans do support access to abortion. At the same time, ever since Roe versus Wade was enacted in the 1970s, there has been a slow and steady effort to chip away at abortion rights because it is such a deeply held divisive issue. And that battle has largely been fought in the states. Now, in 2019, we're going to see an escalation of that battle as legislatures file motions like the one we're going to be seeing in Tallahassee. But are there any others that you're tracking around the country that are similar?
Well, like you said, there is definitely a large subset of the population who is very fired up about this issue, and thousands of them are gathered on the National Mall right now for the annual March for Life. That's been going on for decades, but I think It's interesting now because they have many, many allies in the Trump administration. The vice president is speaking at a dinner affiliated with the March for Life tonight. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar spoke at a anti-abortion conference this morning and will be part of the march. So there's definitely a lot of friendliness to those viewpoints in this administration, and that's being reflected in the policies we're seeing and attempts to cut funding to abortion providers like Planned Parenthood. There was an attempt to allow almost any employer to cut coverage of contraception out of their employee health insurance plans. That was blocked by courts last week. So I think it's important to notice that this administration has allied itself with religious conservatives, but it's also important to see how those policies are playing out in the courts. And I think until recently, that battle was going on in Congress. Now that Democrats have taken back the House, Republicans strengthened their hold on the Senate, we have this divided government where we're going to see both chambers pass laws and policies that they know are not going anywhere, that it's impossible for them. But it's a way to send a message to their voting base ahead of the 2020 races saying this is what we stand for as a party.
Lots of tweets coming into the Florida Roundup about this issue. Here's one from Jay. A law that mandates comprehensive sex education through middle and high school and ready access to birth control would reduce abortions more than this bill. And lots of calls from around Florida. Let's go to Maria in Tampa right now. Maria, you're on the Florida Roundup. Go ahead. Hey, Maria, you're on the radio. Can you hear us? Go ahead. Hey, Maria, turn your radio down and go ahead and talk.
There you go.
Maria, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, I'm in Tampa, which you know is a big seaport.
Uh-huh.
And I've heard a lot of businessmen talk that if abortion becomes illegal, they're going to treat it like gambling. They'll get hospital ships and go into international waters to do it.
Right. And that's actually happened all over the world. In particular, there's an organization called Women on Waves. Is that what you're referring to, like providing abortions on ships?
I've just heard people, men around the seaports, talk about it. The same guys that are in church on Sunday saying abortion is a sin are the same ones talking about setting up abortion ships. And during the week. Anyhow, the problem with this is, though, that it would be people who would have to pay to go out on these ships. Mm-hmm. It would probably, the poorest women who probably need it the most would be knocked out of it. And the average woman could afford it because it's a business. And it would be ran as a business. And it would be handled just like gambling is handled now in the South.
That's Maria in Tampa. Yeah. Maria, thank you so much for that. Alice Olstein, this gets back to the issue of race and class. If women are determined to get an abortion and they can't do it legally on land, they can go out to a boat in international waters and do that. That's being done in other countries where access is extremely limited. And again, this comes down to women of privilege being able to find creative ways to circumvent restrictions on the procedure, correct?
Right. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of conversation on the Democratic side about overturning the Hyde Amendment, the many decades old restriction on any federal funding of abortion care. And the idea there is to make some public funding available for lower income women to be able to access abortion through either through Medicaid or through another federal program. And again, this is not going to become law because the Trump administration would not support it and the Republican Senate would not support it. But the fact that it is being brought to the fore in one of the chambers of Congress is already a huge change from just a few years ago.
Let's continue with the phone calls on this specific issue about accessibility. Vanessa in Miami on line 10. Go ahead, Vanessa. You're on the radio now.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks for calling.
I wanted to also agree about the heartbeat bill and how that, I think that's a slight just to, I agree that's a slight to ban abortion. And I, you know, we're talking about accessibility and if people can afford abortions and like it would only be for the privileged. And they just mentioned the people that need it the most are the ones who can't afford it. And if they can't afford to have an abortion, then they can't afford to have a kid. You know, like, I'm personally in a position where I would have liked to have a kid. I'm a little beyond that, but I didn't, and I responsibly didn't, because I don't want to put strain. I don't want to ask the government for money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so many people need help raising their children from the government. I mean, shouldn't we keep abortion available so people who want to be responsible?
Vanessa, we got it. Thanks for sharing your thoughts. We appreciate it here. Vanessa from Miami. Professor Corbin from UM Law.
I think one statistic that I always find so interesting is that at least 60% of women who have an abortion are already mothers. And so they know what they're doing, and they're often doing it with an eye to making sure that they can provide for the children that they have.
And what about the accessibility of clinics that offer the service in Florida today?
I believe there, I think nationwide, about 90% of women live in counties that don't have an abortion clinic. And in Florida, that number is 70% of counties in Florida don't have an abortion clinic.
And is that the right way? Is that the right metric to look at it per county?
Well, it depends. There are a lot. You know, it's statistics,
sure.
So there are always lots of different ways you could look at it.
Yeah.
You could also say at least 20% of women live in a county that does not have an abortion provider in Florida.
It's 305-995-1800 to join us here on the Florida Roundup. Lots of tweets coming into the show. Here are just a few. This is an attack on women. It will not stop abortion. It will only put women's lives and bank accounts at risk. Please stop calling it pro-life. It means the other side is anti-life. Here's another tweet. Growing up in a Christian home, I never believed abortions were right. But how can I be against it when women can't even get access to basic health care and contraceptives? At the end of the day, it should be the woman's choice alone, not the government's. So, Alice Olstein, those supporting the continued legal abortion in this country will talk about it in that with that rhetoric. It's a woman's right to privacy. It's a woman's right to control her own body. We heard from a caller a little bit ago saying, why don't women consider our view that we believe that this is murder? This tug of war has been going on since 1973. Now, though, with a newly reconfigured U.S. Supreme Court, the stakes are higher than they have ever been. This is going to be an incredibly active year over this issue. People that have worked on both sides of this debate for decades have been preparing for this for quite some time. I think it can't be overstated that the appointment of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court has been a turning point in this when it comes to this matter of abortion in America. Although Justice Kavanaugh said that he would defer to precedent, certainly pro-life organizations are hopeful that that is not the case, that the high court will, if not overturn Roe v. Wade, will severely restrict it. Let me take a quick break here and say you're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. So Alice Olstein of Politico, I know it can be hard to read the tea leaves of the court until they issue a ruling, but what is the talk in Washington about, you know, what Brett Kavanaugh, is he going to be the deciding vote on this issue? A more conservative justice certainly than Anthony Kennedy, who left the court and created the spot for him to rise.
Absolutely. And I think whether the Supreme Court takes this Indiana abortion case is going to be a big signal. Now, the last big-ish signal we got was when the Supreme Court declined to take a case that could have cut states' ability to fund Planned Parenthood. And Justice Kavanaugh actually voted not to take that case, which left states' ability to direct that public money to Planned Parenthood in place. And a lot of people took that as a sign that he might not be so anti-abortion, anti-contraception as many were led to believe. But I don't think you can draw those kinds of sweeping conclusions. It takes four justices to accept a case to the Supreme Court. Obviously, it takes five to have a majority to actually rule on that case. So we are just watching closely to see what the court does.
Professor Corbin, jurisdiction matters. The type of system matters. Is it a case in state court, for instance, in Florida, if this proposed legislation becomes law, or does it go to the federal system? How important is that as the debate about this law will get underway in 6 weeks?
Well, if the case is brought under a state constitution and the grounds for the complaint is the state constitution and not the federal constitution, that's not a case that the Supreme, sure, U.S. Supreme Court is necessarily going to take. And I think that's actually what happened in one of these other fetal heartbeat beats. It was brought under the state constitution. And so, but there are enough of these laws that are actually being litigated under both state and federal constitution that the Supreme Court will have a pick of things. Again, the question is, how soon do they want to actually visit this issue or not?
And what kind of characteristics of a case are they looking for?
Well, I would think it depends on what kind of ruling they want. Now, if they want to simply...
Not the type of decision, but the kind of ruling. Do they want a wholesale,
if they want to completely overrule precedent, mm-hmm, and say that the U.S. Constitution was mistaken in assuming that it protected women's right to an abortion, then it might take something like a heartbeat bill case, where they could just say this is absolutely not protected under at all. If they were going to do a more incremental approach, then this would not be the heartbeat bill like this would not be the best vehicle for them. Something like Indiana might be better, mm-hmm, because they could claim that they're merely applying existing jurisprudence, the existing law, but apply it in a way that upholds most abortion laws.
One more quick phone call from Titusville, Connie on line 11. Go ahead, Connie. Thanks for holding on. We've got a couple minutes left here.
Hi there. What I wanted to remind everybody is, not before it was legal for women to get abortions, not only did they, out of desperation, still get them risking their lives, but my father, who is 91, a retired New York State trooper, has stories of before it was legal, they took women into custody because it was reported as a crime.
What did he tell you about those days, Connie?
Well, he has, firsthand scenarios where they had to report to a person's home and take a woman into custody because it was, as a crime to be investigated and charged.
Connie in Titusville, thank you for that phone call. Alice, how closely is Capitol Hill watching these state houses, specifically here in Florida, for instance, obviously a political swing state? But as these state efforts on abortion have begun to be introduced at the state level, how much are those U.S. representatives watching the action?
Well, I think it's the shift from attention on Capitol Hill to the states is very important. And so Republicans had almost 2 years of full control of every lever of the federal government, and that would have been their opportunity to try to pass some of these bans on the federal level. Yeah. They held the House, they held the Senate, right, they have the White House, they have a pretty conservative Supreme, right, Court, and they were not able to pass it.
No,
they could not get enough support,
changed,
even within their own party.
Changed just this year. Alice Olstein, healthcare reporter for Politico. Caroline Corbin, constitutional law professor at UM. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks again for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, Tom, thousands of Floridians are working without paychecks right now. They are federal government workers for the Coast Guard, the TSA, and the National Weather Service, among others. Jennifer Fike is a senior director of communications with the Coast Guard Foundation. Her group is working with the Coast Guard Chief Petty Officers Association, and they're taking public donations to provide $100 gift cards to as many members of the Coast Guard as they can.
We're not intending to support every Coast Guard member, unfortunately. We don't have the resources for that, nor do we have the resources to replace paychecks, but we're hoping the $100 will help them get a little bit further to have groceries, gas.
Now, in Southwest Florida, one family-owned establishment is helping those in need there. Carmelo LaMotta owns LaMotta's Italian Restaurant. They decided to do what they can by offering members of the Coast Guard and the TSA free meals for as long as this government shutdown lasts.
When we saw this happening, I couldn't believe it. they're the ones that are out there every day patrolling the waterways to be sure that we're safe. And here, they're going to work and not getting a paycheck.
The new head of the Republican Party of Florida says the shutdown is necessary. Here's State Senator Joe Gruters.
Although we may not be winning some of the public opinion arguments on this, I think at the end of the day, the president has to make a stand.
We are almost a month into this partial government shutdown now. The National Air Traffic Controllers Association has sued over working without pay. The union's Southern Regional Vice President, Jim Marinetti, was at the Miami International Airport this week.
As this continues to go on, we are seeing the layers of safety. The redundancies in the system to keep the sky safe is starting to peel away.
So here's a question for you, Florida. Have you missed a paycheck because of the shutdown? Where do you stand on the government shutdown? Give us a call, 305-995-1800, or tweet us at Florida Roundup. As we speak right now with David Goodhue of FloridaKeysNews.com. David, the Coast Guard, an essential Homeland Security workforce, working without pay. It's my understanding that it's the first time in the nation's history that members of our armed forces have gone without pay due to a lapse in appropriations. Can you talk about the particular importance of the Coast Guard for Florida, of course, with our thousands of miles of coastline, and what you're hearing about how they're getting through this shutdown?
Coast Guard's very important down here, particularly in the Florida Keys, where I cover mostly, be it smuggling, at-sea rescues. Right now, like we heard, they are collecting donations. The Coast Guard auxiliaries in the Upper Keys and Ocean Reef and Isle of Mata, we just did a story this morning, mm-hmm. that they donated $50 Publix gift card from Publix Supermarket, mm-hmm. gift cards to the station in Isle of Mata for all 42 members there. There's also in Fort Lauderdale this morning, a Cuban coffee breakfast place donated hot breakfast to members of the Coast Guard Station Fort Lauderdale. So they're, I mean, it's basically right now people are having trouble putting food on the table.
Right. Efforts all over the state to help the Coast Guard. Here in North Florida, where I sit, there's a drive at the USO office in Mayport, which is where they're stationed up here in the Jacksonville area. Here's an email from a listener. She's married to a Coast Guard officer. She said, luckily, I have a good job, so we can survive on just my paycheck. Many other families I know aren't as lucky. My husband just got notice from his command that if any members of the Coast Guard are going to food banks and drives to pick up free food, to not be in their uniforms or have any Coast Guard swag, and to not say anything to the media about this. It's scary and disturbing to me. These are men and women who are still showing up for work every day without pay. Instead of hiding them, the government needs to be paying them. So certainly a lot of frustration and anxiety, not just among the Coast Guard, David, but other federal workers and private businesses around Florida that are being affected by this, too. I think one thing this reminds us all of is that the government is an essential part of the economy. In addition to national security, it touches a lot of private business that's being affected by this as well.
Yeah, it does. It's particularly... In the Florida Keys, the Coast Guard's a major part. I mean, just the other day, there was a active shooter drill for the local police, and the majority of the people taking part in the drill training as law enforcement were Coast Guard. That's how big their presence is in the Upper Keys. So, yeah, that definitely has a big impact on local business.
Have you heard this as well, that Coast Guard personnel who are going out into the community and receiving help are being asked not to do that in uniform, not to wear any kind of T-shirt or insignias that would symbol that they're members of the Coast Guard?
I haven't heard that, but I heard this morning from the people who in Fort Lauderdale who delivered the food that they tried to take some pictures, and the Coast Guard commanders or the officers were very hesitant to let them do that. They don't really want publicity over this.
And this is top to down to top personnel. This isn't just the junior officers. This is affecting the entire Coast Guard.
Oh, everybody. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can't say especially enlisted personnel, but yeah, I mean, they're all living paycheck to paycheck now. I mean, there is no paycheck now.
Right.
Yeah, there is no paycheck. You know, at the same time, David, there's a bipartisan push in Congress to at least pay the Coast Guard while the shutdown continues. There are so many different federal workers furloughed that do all kinds of different jobs. But there seems to be unanimity in the Congress and also among Florida lawmakers that at least the Coast Guard should be paid during this shutdown. Not sure what the chances are of that legislation getting passed, but this is a unique category of workers. I mean, as far as I know, they're the only federal worker that has a job that requires them to put themselves potentially in harm's way while this continues. As they go out onto the water without pay, unlike some other federal workers, they're working a physically hazardous job. You know, we don't always stop to think about that. But as someone who's covered the Coast Guard, you know a little bit more about that, of the types of situations they can get into. Can you talk a little bit about that?
They're out there all the time, no matter what the weather conditions. They perform at sea rescues in very hazardous conditions. And not only that, I mean, there are front lines in terms of human smuggling, drug smuggling. They work with foreign navies down in the East Pacific to stop drug shipments coming out of South America, essentially acting as a navy. So they're basically our, you know, they are the navy in certain times of war, they are the Navy.
Yeah, the domestic Navy oftentimes, yeah, what they've seen as. Yeah. You are listening to Florida, the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. 305-995-1800. Maybe you are retired from the Coast Guard, have a family member in the Coast Guard. Maybe you know somebody who works for the TSA or the National Weather Service, also agencies that are staffed, but staffed without paychecks here during this partial government shutdown in the state of Florida. We all know how important the Coast Guard is, TSA and transportation, certainly the National Weather Service. Beautiful weather in Florida now, but they are doing hurricane preparedness in the off season. Hannah in Boca Raton in South Florida is with us on line one. Go ahead, Hannah. Thanks for calling. Hannah, you with us? Go ahead.
I am. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, if our federal elected officials need to stop acting like 5-year-olds, they need to do their job and find the middle path. And if they believe in this garbage so much, they should stop their own pay, not people who are actually putting their lives on the line.
Hannah, thanks for the call, the impassion there. In fact, is part of some of the effort from new Florida Senator Rick Scott in supporting trying to get pay for Coast Guards. He's also talked about having congressmen and women not take paychecks during this partial government shutdown. But again, we'll see if that legislation goes anywhere. David Goodhue with the FloridaKeys.com, the FloridaKeysNews.com, and the Miami Herald. The commandant of the Coast Guard released a pretty unique statement on the day of the first missed paycheck for Coast Guard personnel. What did it say, and what did it say that he actually released that statement?
It says a lot. I mean, as we were talking before, how some of the Coast Guard doesn't want a lot of publicity for different things in terms of handouts. He was very upfront saying, first of all, that to his knowledge, this is the first time any member of the military branches went without pay because of a lapse in funding. He urged their patience because they, no matter what happens, they have to go out there every day and perform their jobs. We've reported this week on a handful of at-sea rescues that they've been doing, and they stopped some. Then on the law enforcement end, they picked up some stowaways coming in from on a container ship outside of the port of Miami. So they have to work no matter what. And he just urged their patience and urged them to keep doing their jobs. But I mean, he was very candid on how unique this is. Mm-hmm.
It is a unique situation, to the point where USAA, the military insurer, they've offered $15 million in interest-free loans for Coast Guard members during the shutdown. In Florida, a number of businesses and lending institutions have done the same, like Vistar Credit Union and others. David Goodhue, so private industry and charitable efforts, they're doing what they can to help these folks. It's sort of a stopgap way, I guess, of getting them through this. The first missed paycheck went out Tuesday, I believe. If there's another missed pay period, it's our understanding, as we've spoken to a couple of public information officers for the Southeast offline, a second missed paycheck, families are getting into what could be a dire situation for some of them. Quickly before we wrap up, we are out of time, so we are going to have to wrap you up, David Goodhue. We're going to follow this story here on the Florida Roundup and on Florida Public Radio. Lots of Coast Guard staff and families being affected by this. So David Goodhue, read him at flkeysnews.com about the government shutdown and our coastlines, how the Coast Guard is being affected by the loss in pay. And, you know, there's probably a charitable drive in your corner of the state, so check that out, too. David Goodhue, thank you so much for joining the Florida Roundup. We really appreciate you being on the show.
No, thank you.
And that is our show for today. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Bridget O'Brien and Heather Schatz are producers.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming, also our Technical Director this hour. The Director of Radio Operations in Miami is Peter Meritz. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back next week. Have a great holiday weekend.